Yeah. The tail's pretty dope. I mean, it's soft. I think you could sleep on it. It's great for cuddling. It's great for balance and trees. And yeah, and also she can talk to squirrels.
Hey everybody, this is Ash from the Rated NA Podcast here with an exclusive interview recorded live at San Diego Comic-Con 2018. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review on iTunes and give us a follow on Twitter at NerdAppropriate. Welcome back.
It's so good to be back. It's nice to have a check-in with you every year.
I know, right? We were goofing around the first time you were on the show. I'm sure I'm actually recording. Yeah.
When was that?
It was at this point probably... four and a half years ago, mm-hmm. You came on the show. You made fun of my messy room on the podcast because we did it via Skype.
Yeah, I remember. I also remember that I had my Invisalign in at the time.
Did you?
And I was kind of like lightly lisping throughout the interview.
It's funny that you brought that up because, well, I'll jump back to this, but there's a Squirrel Girl delivery line in the new Marvel Rising where you use sort of a weird lispy voice that's hilarious.
That's just how I talk sometimes.
It's amazing.
Yeah, my boyfriend and I are constantly talking to each other like we're children, like we're just learning to talk, and not noticing that we've switched into dumb talk. Like, and yesterday we were on this bus. It was this crazy day yesterday, and I'll tell you
panel,
all about it. It was
way.
Crazy.
I did see the panel.
You were there.
Yeah, it was there.
That's
it was
so cool
great.
Of you
it was
to go.
Super fun. It was a lot of fun.
It was a wild experience.
Right.
But the cool thing about doing a panel and being in San Diego and being with Marvel is that you don't have to drive or walk anywhere.
It's pretty
which
crazy.
Was a big part of my day today because I just went out on the floor. And they we were like on the bus and talking to each other like children, not realizing that we're surrounded by a bus full of people who are not talking. So everybody can inevitably hear us. And then we just catch ourselves being, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
So the next time you were on the show was we met you at a bowling alley where you used to work.
Yeah.
And that was, I think, our first and only bowling alley interview that we've ever done, which was super fun. And now we are
Here's a great idea. Let's have an interview in the loudest establishment possible.
It actually turned out okay. It was a fun one.
Good.
And now we're in some like mega suite with like key cards and things have changed.
Yeah.
It's pretty rad. Congratulations.
It's bizarre, but I love it.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. So in the time, I guess it was 2 or 3 years ago at this point, what's been going on? Like, how have you been? How have things been going?
Good. I mean, it definitely is figuring out. You know, yesterday I was having dinner with a friend, and he was telling me, he's like, you know, if I wasn't doing what I was doing, I would have ended up in, like, sports marketing. And if you weren't doing what you're doing, what do you think you'd be doing? And I was like, I think I'd still be figuring out how to do this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's still how I feel a little bit, is I'm just like always figuring out opportunities to do this more.
I think a lot of people feel that way, but don't ever want to admit that to themselves. No matter like how far along you get in your career, I think a lot of people are always kind of second guessing and asking themselves that question. Like I was a teacher for 6-7 years before
I
moved into video games and do stuff in video games now. But it the whole time I was teaching, I was like, what would I be doing if I wasn't doing this? And now that I'm, you know, working in another space, I ask myself the same question. So it's very interesting. But you had a moment, since we don't have a lot of time, you had a moment yesterday that was a literal mic drop moment at the panel, the Marvel Rising panel, which was fantastic. Super, everyone should check it out. But you started talking about inclusivity and, you know, how this show is going to impact young people. I don't want you to obviously repeat what you said verbatim, but it was so good. And it was funny, but also at the same time, you were talking about how animation and shows like this have the capacity to really open people's eyes.
Yeah, storytelling in general. I think that's the reason people are so attracted to heroes and to vulnerable characters and to villains. It's a story that changes the way you think and feel. Mm-hmm. And if you can change the way you think and feel, then you can change your belief system, because a belief is just a thought that you've thought enough times that you think it's true. And what's powerful about the cartoon, all stories are powerful, but specifically when you're talking to young people, is you can implement these really positive messages of inclusivity and diversity and compassion really early on through comedy and action and beautiful imagery and friendship, you know, and all these positive themes that are enjoyable and maybe also subliminally teaching your kids to be tolerant and caring.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to that. I mean, since we last spoke, I have a 2-year-old now.
So, wow, congratulations. Yeah, so I'm a new dad. We haven't spoken in 2 years.
It's been...
we didn't catch each other last year because I was here for... I think, last year I had the saddest panel of all time.
What happened? What was that?
Well, it was just sad in that it was pathetic and that there were like 16 people. It was like a giant room with 16 people.
I totally would have gone to that.
I wish you had. I wish I had promoted it more. It was all I have all the regrets about it, but it was still... super fun and silly. I mean, I had the best time, even if no one else did.
But I
know that we have this Comic-Con tradition.
Yeah,
and I totally
it's awesome. I love it.
Missed it last year.
Matt, who does the show with me, was bummed he couldn't quite make it on time. But
is he here? Is he in San Diego?
He's here. Yeah. Oh. He's here. He's just couldn't make it across the town, as didn't get on a cool scooter like me, so he couldn't quite make it on time.
Missing out.
Yeah. So I mean, like I said, as a new dad, I kind of look at animation and such differently now because, like you said, children are learning in a lot of ways through osmosis. It's like a lot of that behavior that they witness and how characters treat each other. They really do start mirroring that behavior. And there's nothing wrong with kick-ass action. But at the same time, if you have a show that has a lot of diversity and a lot of really strong characters, I think that goes a very long way and can do a lot of good.
Especially because the show is different. You know, one of the things I said in the panel, which might be what you were talking about, is that when I was young, anything that I watched, not anything, there were definitely positive female characters, but a lot of the action adventure and a lot of the comedy I watched was very much about male characters.
Yeah.
And I had no problem seeing myself in them.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, I've been through that, or I can relate with that kind of struggle, or, you know, they're mad at this bully just like I would be. And it was very easy to put myself in those characters' shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that for young boys, it's they haven't really had to have the practice of putting themselves in the shoes of female characters.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can do that, then maybe you could start relating more with characters who are not identical to you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, ultimately, we're all human beings, and a lot of our struggles and strife are relatively very similar.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can start thinking of, as I don't know, this radical concept of women as people
mm-hmm.
at a really young age, then you can kind of abolish these ideas of, you know, these very segregated gender roles. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, what you did say on the panel was something very similar to that. And it was great because the audience really responded to it. And I think Chloe Bennett knocked your mic over and gave you a mic drop moment because it was super cool. And I think it's not on the nose and it's not pushing anything toward an audience. It's sort of like you said, children can discover it and identify with these strong female characters just on their own, you know, by watching it, which is, you know, which is great. And the animation was super fun. Everything was
so fun.
There were like
so
literal
funny.
As an old adult man myself, there were laugh out loud moments in this show that I just really loved. I love the anime style when Squirrel Girl goes anime and it was just very, very well done.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
It's a very funny show. It was written really well, and Squirrel Girl is just a funny being. All of the comic books are laugh out loud.
Yeah.
Every time I get to experience her, she just sees the world through this kind of radical point of view. And I've never portrayed her and not had the best time because of it.
Yeah.
I feel like just reading her lines lifts me up. So I hope
it
doesn't.
You were having a lot of fun on the panel. You're hooting and hollering. Because, I mean, it is. She's a fantastic character and just so much fun to play.
Yeah. And I also have the best time in front of a crowd.
Yeah. Well, there's nothing wrong with that. You do lots of stand-up and stuff.
Yeah.
How's all that going?
Great.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it more
like
now than
it
did.
Multiple times a week now, isn't it? It's like pretty frequent.
Yeah, a couple times a week. It's it depends on the schedule, but it's always the best. Yeah. You know, when I first started doing stand-up, it's been about 4 or 5 years since I've been doing it, and early on, TJ Miller told me that you have to do stand-up for 3 years to even know if you like it. And that was really great advice, because there were so many times in that first 3 years where I was like, I want to quit. Yeah, you know, because when you bomb, it really hurts. And you're like, why am I putting myself through this? It's just like the embarrassment. I mean, ultimately, the crowd doesn't care. They forgive you. They'll watch you again next time and give you another chance. But it feels like the end of the world.
Oh, yeah.
Because you've written these things. And, you know, the way that I do comedy is like, I'm telling my truth. I'm not like just writing jokes for the sake of comedy. I am like really sharing my point of view with you.
Yeah.
And if you are not entertained, then my thoughts have failed me. Then what is God? Like, everything just like falls into shambles, and then I can have a great show the next day and be on a high until I fail again.
Yeah, that's I mean, that's such bravery. I remember when I was teaching, I would come up with like ridiculous puns or something silly, and when it would fall flat on my audience of, you know, 30-15 year olds, it would be like devastating. So I was like, man, that one joke that I thought of in the car on the way here just did not quite work out.
You know, I listened to this great podcast called Work Life by Adam Grant, and Adam Grant and Malcolm Gladwell had a conversation, and he asked Malcolm, who do you think are kind of like the philosophers or the sociologists of our time that aren't actually philosophers or sociologists? And Adam Grant said, I think it's comedians, because they're always observing and it's so brave what they're doing and they're really speaking truth. And Malcolm Gladwell was like, what are you talking about? Do you know what it takes to get up in front of a room of drunk people? It's not that hard. You know what's really hard? Being a teacher.
Yeah,
you know what's really hard is like getting a bunch of first graders to listen to you, keeping their attention. So, and I totally agreed with him. So, I hats off to you and
my
to
wife's
all teachers.
A second grade teacher, so she has she's still doing it. I think going on year 12. So it's a rough path, but it's you know, it's challenging. Still, stand up comedy, a whole nother ball of wax.
Yeah, but it's adults who want to give you their attention.
That's true.
I think like when you're trying to get the attention of second graders who would rather be on their iPhones. Actually, adults would rather be on their iPhones too. Probably
absolutely. So this is not the best segue, but I do want to get to it before you get out of here.
Yeah.
Can't Do Nothing.
Yeah.
We actually haven't talked since you launched it. It's amazing. You're doing a lot of really great stuff as someone who, you know, in my past years tried to teach people about bad things going on in the world and bad things that have been going on in the world. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about it and kind of the short version, since we don't have a ton of time, on how it kind of got started?
Yeah, it started because I was in Greece on vacation. This is before the Trump election. And I started to learn a little bit about the Syrian refugee crisis and was really ashamed about how little I knew as an American, how little really global policy at all I had any sense of. And it really hurt me. Like, I felt really embarrassed, and I kind of made a promise to myself to be a global citizen and to be a force for good. And in order to take action towards that, I changed my ticket at the very last minute. I couldn't even change my ticket. I lost my money. And I went to this tiny island called Lesbos, which was receiving thousands of Syrian and Afghani and Lebanese, I mean, tons of refugees a day. And I made a short film about it.
On your iPhone.
I just recorded it on my iPhone because that's what
I
had.
Thanks. It was really well done. You did a great
job. I really appreciate that. I'm super proud of it. It's probably like I can find shit to say about everything I made, and that's the thing that has been like 100% rewarding. At the end of the film, there's this website that you could visit, which is can'tdonothing.org, and there you can find ways to help with the refugee crisis, because I feel like that's the thing that's always missing when you watch the news or 60 Minutes or a lot of documentaries too.
It's
like, wow, okay, so we're polluting our rivers. that sucks. Do you want to get pizza? Like, it's like, yeah, you don't really know how to take action. And so I feel like when you're moved is a great time to
absolutely
pull out your internet and do something about it. So that website has now raised money for lots of really amazing organizations. And those organizations have gone on to do great things. So I honestly think Can't Do Nothing has been really helpful, but cannot take the credit for the amazing things that have come from it. So one of the organizations we work with is called the Syria Fund, and they build schools for kids living outside of the refugee camps in Jordan. And they're now building their second school because of this tiny YouTube. You know, it's a short doc, which is crazy. In addition to many other people who have helped out, there's an organization called Miri's List, which is a local California organization that helps recently resettled refugees get the basic things they need, like light bulbs and diapers and towels. You know, like things that you don't think about are so necessary when you're starting over.
Right.
So there's lots of really wonderful things.
That's very cool. We could talk about this for hours, but I know we're kind of short on time. But it's interesting because a lot of people never have that moment where they decide that they want to do something. Was it being there and seeing it yourself? Was that sort of the catalyst for making you want to make a difference?
I actually didn't really see it where I was. I just started to see it more on the news. And it was flipping through the channels and seeing that the BBC was talking about the refugee crisis, the Greek news was talking about it, the Russian news was talking about it, and CNN was talking about Donald Trump and the Emmys. And I was like, oh, yeah. I'm not getting the information I need. I need to actually seek that out. And I think what's a blessing about this administration is a lot of people have had that realization themselves. Sometimes things have to get hard enough for people to make a change, and that's what's happening. You know, there have been so many people who have woken up to the fact that things are not as rosy as they once thought, mm-hmm. and they have to take things into their own hands. And so now there's more amateur activists than ever before,
which is great. It's what we need. It's awesome.
Absolutely. And so in a way, I think a lot of people have had that Can't Do Nothing moment where they realize they must take action towards something, even if they have no freaking idea how to do it.
That's awesome. Well, I applaud you, and we'll definitely put links to all your stuff in the show notes so people can go there and help out a little bit. Let's wrap this up with the 60 seconds of lightning round.
Oh, boy.
Silly questions.
Okay.
Did Squirrel Girl survive Thanos' snap?
Squirrel Girl defeated Thanos.
Oh, there you go. So Squirrel Girl defeats Thanos. All right, next one. Would you want to have Doreen's powers and mutations in real life? Big tail.
Yeah. The tail's pretty dope. I mean, it's soft. I think you could sleep on it. It's great for cuddling. It's great for balance and trees. And and also she can talk to squirrels.
Right.
She can summon the power of squirrels.
They're very valuable.
Could be vicious. You don't want to get on the bad side of squirrels.
I actually was bitten once. No powers developed, but I was bitten by a squirrel.
Terrible. Blood. Did you have to get a rabies shot?
It's funny. I should have gotten a rabies shot.
You're like, that squirrel looks clean.
I marked an X on the calendar because rabies takes like 30 days. And I marked an X. I'm like, if I live past this date, I'll be fine.
Wow. You're a gambling man.
Very poor life decision that I would not make at this point in my life. All right. What noise did you make when you found out you were cast as Squirrel Girl?
It was more of like a silent chill.
Really?
You
were just kind of like, yep.
I was just like, ugh. Well, Squirrel Girl has been the only part I've ever auditioned for that I really felt like was super right. I was like, yes, I know. Like going into it, I was like, there's nobody else who could do this. And I mean, I'm sure there are tons of other people that can do it, but I just felt so drawn to it. And I felt like I was so right for it. And when I got a call from Jeff Loeb, who's the head of Marvel TV, and he said, welcome to Marvel. Even when I say it, I'm just like, oh, like just a tiny little chill.
It's crazy. It's so cool. I was so happy when I heard that happened to you. Okay.
Thank you.
And the last one is, what would you do with your very own Infinity Gauntlet?
Can I use it for good?
Yeah. You can do whatever you want. It's like basically like free wishes.
Yeah. It's just like infinite free wishes.
Yeah.
Probably stop global warming.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Maybe start there. Maybe reduce our need for fossil fuels and feed the hungry and like build schools.
There you go. Well, thank you so much. Where can people
and then
find
like
you?
Be like crazy rich, and then like I'll like get myself like a Ferrari limo,
one of those
like
cool...
a, like the longest Ferrari.
Yeah, and a bird scooter. Those are fun. Okay, so where can people find you on social media?
My name is at Mint Milana on all of the handles.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming back. This has been so much fun.
Thank you so much for coming here.
Of course, it was great. See you next time. Thanks so much for listening to our San Diego Comic-Con coverage. As always, you can follow us on Twitter, at NerdAppropriate, Facebook, /NerdAppropriate, or email us directly, MattScottOrAsh@NerdAppropriate.com. We're going to be at PAX West in September, and we'll be on a number of panels at the show, so keep listening. For more information and more details leading up to the event, we hope to see you there.